From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Hello, I'm Kim Lewis, and this is Press Conference USA. Imagine this scenario. It is late night, December 31st, 1862, and you are a slave waiting amongst family and friends for the stroke of midnight to take place, knowing at that time the Emancipation Proclamation issued by President Abraham Lincoln would have taken effect, and all enslaved people, which numbered over 3 million in Confederate states, would be declared legally free. Not all slaves were immediately set free at this time. Even though the Emancipation Proclamation was made effective in 1863, it could not be implemented in places still under Confederate control. In the westernmost Confederate state of Texas, enslaved people were not free until 2 years later, on June 19, 1865. The former slaves celebrated their freedom with prayer, feasting, song, and dance. Over the years, many around the world have celebrated the day long before it became a federal holiday in the United States on June 19, 2021, when President Joe Biden signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act into law. And on March 29, 2022, President Biden signed into law the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which makes lynching a federal hate crime in the United States. The bill is named after 14-year-old Emmett Till, an African-American boy from Chicago who was brutally murdered by a group of white men in Mississippi for allegedly whistling at a white woman in 1955. His murder sparked national outrage and was a catalyst for the civil rights movement. Lynching was a terror tactic used against Black Americans, particularly in the racially segregated South. Well, joining me to discuss the history of lynching and the significance of the celebration of Juneteenth is historian, author, journalist, and professor Jesse Holland. Jesse is the author of several award-winning books, among them The Invisibles, African-American Slavery Inside the White House, and Black Men Built the Capitol, Discovering African-American History in and Around Washington, D.C. His journalistic work continues to be recognized with awards. Welcome, Jesse. It's great to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me on today.
Also joining me on the panel is my colleague, VOA Senior National Affairs Correspondent Chris Simpkins. Chris covers domestic U.S. news and feature stories and is a producer of several award-winning documentaries and special project reports. Chris produced the acclaimed documentary, which marked the 400th anniversary of the first Africans to arrive in America. Chris, it's great to have you join us again.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Well, let's start with President Biden's Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which makes lynching a federal hate crime. For Americans to appreciate the significance of the act, we must understand the history of lynching. Jesse, white mobs often used dubious criminal accusations to justify lynching. A common claim used to lynch Black men was perceived sexual transgressions against white women. So what was the true reasoning behind these charges that for the most part were not true?
Well, the true reason behind the charges was frankly white supremacy. Anytime any white man in the South feared that his control over his land, his women, his money was imperiled in any way, they could at any time decide to go lynch the perpetrator. And one of the common myths behind lynching in the South is that lynching was just done on Black men. No, that's incorrect. Black women and children were also lynched in the South. So lynching was never about justice. It was frankly never about revenge. Lynching was simply about power, the power that white men in the South wanted to continue to hold after the Civil War, frankly, before the Civil War and after the Civil War. It only took trumped up charges that would allow them to perpetrate this act of terrorism, this act of murder. And while we've seen some numbers in the thousands, I would probably assume that the number is much, much higher, maybe even in the tens of thousands, because many times these lynchings were never reported. So the reason behind these lynching was never to avenge a death, or the lynching was never about people not being prosecuted for crimes. It was only about power.
Jesse, tell us, these lynchings were often community spectacles that would be announced and the town or residents would gather for these lynchings. Photographs would be taken and sent out as souvenirs. Tell us about the impact that had on what we were seeing as far as mob violence in the country.
Right, and that's part of the most horrific part of the entire spectacle. These lynchings were not a few men in the woods stringing up a person to a tree. Some of them were like that, there's no doubt. But a large portion of these lynchings were literally community events where people would bring their children, they would bring picnic lunches. There are photographs of these lynchings that show crowds of hundreds of people standing around watching a human being die. What makes it even worse is that not only would the person be lynched, the body afterward would be mutilated. It would either be burned or the body would be cut up and sold as souvenirs to the waiting crowd. Now, saying this today sounds absolutely horrific. Sounds like there's no way that this could have actually happened in the United States. But there are photographs. There are literal photographs of these atrocities as people were watching people being hung, people being burned, people being mutilated. And for some reason, there are still postcards that were sold of these lynching events. Not only do we have the murderers themselves, the people who were doing the lynching, you also have hundreds of accessories, hundreds of people who could be charged as accessories to the crime, because not only did they come watch it, they came to watch and enjoy it. And this sounds like something from the medieval society. No, this was only 50 to 100 years ago. The people we're talking about are our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, our grandmothers and great-grandmothers. So this is not too far away from where we are today.
And several important civil rights organizations, including the NAACP, they emerged to combat this type of racial violence. The NAACP also fought for anti-lynching legislation. In 1918, Congressman Leonidas Dyer of Missouri first introduced his anti-lynching bill, known as the Dyer Bill, into Congress. The NAACP supported passage of the bill from 1919 onward, though it was defeated by a Senate filibuster. So what was the climate like for African Americans in this part of our time frame, early 1900s?
Well, keep in mind that in the early 1900s, this is before World War I, but this is after the Civil War. Reconstruction has already ended. The support that African Americans were getting from the federal government in Washington is now waning, and white male Southerners are now trying to regain their power in the South. Keep in mind that right after the Civil War, during Reconstruction, there was a huge push for African Americans to vote. And African-American legislators are being elected in the states. African-American congressmen are being sent to Washington. So what the white Southern male saw after Reconstruction was a chance to regain the power that they enjoyed before the Civil War. And the way they started doing that is through terrorism, through organizations like the Ku Klux Klan, and through the law enforcement in the South. So African Americans are coming off of a period of unprecedented power after the Civil War, but they're now seeing a huge rise in violence, in not federal sanctioned violence, but state sanctioned violence against African American men, women, and children in the South. This is when we see this huge spate of lynching beginning, because white males can't take them at this point to court because the federal government will notice that. So they turn to terrorism to try to push back on some of the power that African Americans are enjoying under the Constitution in the United States.
Also, as time went on, national lynching rates declined in the 1930s. However, in 1955, 14-year-old Emmett Till supposedly whistled at a white woman in a store while visiting relatives in Mississippi. So, Jesse, tell us more about Emmett's story and how it came to reach national attention.
Well, Emmett Till was visiting Mississippi from Chicago. And the way the story was told by whites in Mississippi was that Emmett Till was being disrespectful and whistled at a white woman. Now, we don't know for a fact exactly what happened to Emmett Till. What we do know for a fact is that Emmett Till's body was found mutilated and returned back to his mother in Chicago. Emmett Till was not the first person to be mutilated and lynched in Mississippi. But the thing that changed was that Emmett Till's mother refused to be silent about what happened to her son. She refused to have a closed casket funeral. She invited the media to see what had been done to her son in Mississippi. And that attention to the horrific violence that had been done to Emmett Till's body helped spark a change in how Americans, not just Black Americans, not just white Americans, at how Americans looked at the violence that was going on in the South to African Americans. It did not change things immediately, but it was the spark that eventually led us to the bill that was signed by President Joe Biden.
Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I think about the Emmett Till case raising exposure, but I also think about some of those other crusaders, anti-lynching crusaders, who made a difference. And one of those individuals is Ida B. Wells Barnett. In the late 1800s, one of her friends was lynched, and she turned her attention to trying to expose this white mob violence and lynching. She also traveled internationally to shed light on lynching to foreign audiences and would, you know, openly confront white women who ignored lynching as a part of the suffrage movement. Jesse, what kind of impact did this have on exposing what was going on in our country at the time, and especially internationally?
Well, Ida B. Wells Barnett is one of my heroes simply because, first, she and I are from the same town. We were both born in Holly Springs, Mississippi, and I visited the Ida B. Wells Museum in Holly Springs several times. The work that Ida B. Wells did on lynching in the United States is unparalleled. Keep in mind that she's doing this work while people are being lynched. It's one thing for us to go back now in 2022 and look at the numbers and try to figure out whether something was a lynching or whether something was a suicide. Ida B. Wells Barnett was doing the work while her own life was in danger, while she could have easily been lynched herself. She was a courageous journalist whose newspaper in Memphis, Tennessee, was burned to the ground because of her work trying to expose the number of lynchings that were going on in the South. However, burning her newspaper did not stop her. She began doing tours and writing books and pamphlets about lynching in the United States and around the world. She went on tours around the world trying to bring attention to the horrific lynchings that she saw going on in the South. She was one of the first, if not the only, journalist who did the work in Elaine, Arkansas, which was one of the largest massacres of African Americans in the South. She did the work by heading to Elaine, Arkansas, and talking to survivors immediately after the lynchings and the beatings and the killings. And it's because of her that we know what happened in several cities like Elaine, Arkansas. We know what the number of lynchings were in the South. And Ida B. Wells will tell you herself. She wrote it in several of her books. She couldn't get everybody. She couldn't find proof of every lynching because sometimes men and women would just vanish and their bodies would never found. But without work of courageous journalists like Ida B. Wells, we would not have a tenth of the information that we have now about lynchings. And we would have to be arguing with people in contemporary society whether these lynchings even ever happened. It's because of Ida B. Wells that we don't question whether lynchings happened. We know that they happened. We have proof. We have eyewitness accounts. We have photographs. Now we need to just reconcile ourselves with the way that African Americans were treated in this country by their fellow citizens and whether anything today can be done about it.
Which brings me to my next question. Why is it important that the U.S. have this anti-lynching law, and why did it take so long?
Well, the reason why it took so long to pass is because it's very hard to get people to give up any type of power. Once again, going back to what I said at the beginning, lynching was power for Southern white males. It was virtually impossible to get someone to voluntarily give up power, to understand that they can be punished for doing a thing that is horrific and wrong. So for years, white male Southern politicians stood in the way of passing any type of federal anti-lynching law. And any prosecution that was done, the fact that it was very rare, but any prosecution was done would have to be in the hands of the states. This new law elevates lynching to the hands of the federal authorities. Now, many people, and I, frankly, one of them, will tell you that this law is 100 years too late. We're now criminalizing something that very rarely happens in our society anymore. I'm never going to say people cannot be lynched today in the United States. But the good thing about this federal anti-lynching law is that by criminalizing it, we're ensuring that if it ever happens again in the future, we are not dependent on local and state law enforcement to solely take care of it, because in the past, it was state and local law enforcement that were committing the crimes. While this new anti-lynching law is 100 years too late for thousands of African Americans who died, it is a step to ensure that it doesn't happen again in the future.
Jesse, some experts say that this new anti-lynching law may not prevent hate crimes, but they claim it's better to have education and recognize the pervasiveness of this racial violence. How important is education in acknowledging lynching?
I note that experts who say anti-lynching laws are not necessary are never experts who have to worry about ever being lynched. So I'll start out by saying that. But I will agree, in addition to the laws, we should be teaching and making sure that people growing up today know that this type of actions were taken in the United States, that this is what their grandfathers and great-grandfathers did, so we can ensure that it never happens again. It's a cliche, but cliches are cliches because they're true. Those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. So by teaching this history, it is another step toward ensuring that this type of horrific terrorism never happens in the United States again.
And on that note, we will take a short break. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is award-winning historian, author, journalist, and professor Jesse Holland. And we are joined by my colleague, VOA Senior National Affairs Correspondent Chris Simpkins. I'm Kim Lewis. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA and on our new website, voaafrica.com. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Let's now turn our discussion to examining the history and legacy of Juneteenth. Well, Jesse, many people have been celebrating Juneteenth long before it became a federal holiday in the U.S. Why is it important that this day be recognized as a national holiday here in the U.S.?
Well, keep in mind that Juneteenth started out as a celebration of freedom. And while the July 4th is the celebration of freedom for the United States, Juneteenth is a celebration of freedom for African Americans after the Civil War. It's a time to recognize how far African Americans have come in the United States since the Civil War. Now, not every African American in the United States are descendants of slaves, but for the large majority of us who are, Juneteenth is a time for us to take stock of who we are today and where we came from and the sacrifices our ancestors went through before the Civil War and since the Civil War to get us where we are. There are very few holidays for African Americans where we can celebrate our advancement. And Juneteenth is a time for not only African Americans, but all Americans to celebrate how far our country has come since the Civil War.
In looking at the history of Juneteenth, what was different about Texas that it took 2 years for slaves there to find out they had been freed? Was it basically because of just so far west?
Well, that is a good excuse that Texans used to inform their slaves that they were free. White Texans knew that the Civil War was over. White Texans knew that the South had lost and that slavery had been banned. What took so long was it took that long for federal forces to go to Texas and enforce the new federal law saying slavery had ended. It wasn't that white Texans didn't know the Civil War was over. It was that white Texans didn't tell their slaves that the Civil War was over. They lied to them for years to continue to get free labor out of them. Juneteenth is when the lie ended and federal forces showed up to enforce the new federal law saying slavery was illegal in the United States. Let's not fool ourselves and think that white Texans didn't know the Civil War was over. The white Texans who fought in the Civil War knew the war was over. They just tried to get as much free extra work out of their former slaves as they could before federal forces showed up and forced them to let them go.
Jesse, how should we be observing Juneteenth going forward as it is a new federal holiday? I know, like Martin Luther King Day, that we observe, the country has taken that on as kind of a national day of service. How do you see the observance of Juneteenth moving forward? Is it to promote other things that are important to the African American community, like economic empowerment and voter participation, voter registration?
We're still trying to figure out how Juneteenth fits into our lives today. We have several companies and corporations who are already trying to profit off of Juneteenth. For example, one company did a Juneteenth flavored ice cream. One company is trying to do a Juneteenth car sale, and they are immediately being shamed and disparaged for trying to put a profit motive on Juneteenth. In the past, Juneteenth celebrations have usually revolved around churches and community centers. There have been cities that have done Juneteenth parades and Juneteenth picnics. In fact, before it was declared a federal holiday, 46 states were already doing Juneteenth celebrations. I don't think that there is any one way yet to celebrate Juneteenth. I think we're still trying to figure out how we as a country are going to celebrate Juneteenth. For now, I think we're going to see many of the smaller celebrations still be the headliners as we as a country try to figure out whether Juneteenth will become a day of service. Will Juneteenth become a day of rest? Will Juneteenth become a day of celebration? Will Juneteenth become a day of parades, picnics? And Chris, part of the thing is, while we're celebrating Juneteenth as a federal holiday, understand that many states celebrated that same event on different days. For example, in my home state of Mississippi, Emancipation Day is actually on May 9th. It's not on June 19th. Here in Washington, D.C., Emancipation Day is celebrated in April. So you have a lot of different celebrations that are being pushed into one federal holiday, and many states are loath to give up their own celebrations just because the United States Congress has decided to federalize the one being celebrated in Texas. So we're still trying to figure out exactly how we as a country are going to celebrate Juneteenth. But frankly, this is a good problem to have.
Yes, it is. And what should young people know about Juneteenth and how should they celebrate it?
I will tell you what we do here in my household. Juneteenth is a celebration of history. This is a time that we take to go over our ancestry and figure out how we got to where we are now. We take time to look over our genealogy. We take time to go visit graveyards of people that we've lost. And we figure out how we've gotten to where we are from where we came from in the past. My ancestry goes back to Mississippi. My wife's ancestry goes back to Louisiana and Texas. And Juneteenth is a time we take to talk about where we came from and where we're going and to celebrate the sacrifices of our ancestors. The great thing about Juneteenth is that it forever will make sure that people recognize where we came from as a African-American race and hopefully will help us remember where we're going from this point. So I think as long as you're remembering the past in some shape, form, or fashion, you're doing right by Juneteenth.
Jesse, I think it's important that more Americans will take part in Juneteenth, not just African Americans. Do you see a broader number of Americans besides Black Americans recognizing this day and sharing in the celebrations and observances?
There should be, because there seems to be this weird dichotomy between African-American history and American history. We're not celebrating just African-American history on Juneteenth. We're celebrating American history. And it's something that we should share with everyone. Just like we share the story of Thanksgiving and the Pilgrims, everyone is able to celebrate that. Everyone should be able to celebrate the freedom of African-Americans post-Civil War in the United States. That is one thing that we really need to get over as a country, the fact that we celebrate African-American history separately from American history. Juneteenth is American history, and everyone should be able to celebrate it. And I'm looking forward to seeing Juneteenth celebrations with people of all races, colors, and creeds here in the United States in the future.
And on that excellent note, we'll have to wrap up the show as we are out of time. I want to thank my distinguished guest for joining me, award-winning historian, author, journalist, and professor Jesse Holland, and my colleague, award-winning VOA senior national affairs correspondent, Chris Simpkins. Thank you so much for providing us with these insights into the historical significance of the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act and the legacy of Juneteenth as a national holiday on June 19th here in the United States. I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to join Carol Castiel next weekend for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.